You're listening to The Green on Delaware Public Media, and I'm Tom Byrne. Earlier this week, Governor John Carney announced he'll initiate an independent review of the immediate and underlying causes of last week's hostage incident at Vaughn Correctional Center that left a correctional officer, Lieutenant Stephen Floyd, dead. It came the same day the Delaware Coalition of Prison Reform and Justice called for an independent federal investigation into the state's correctional system in the wake of that incident. The coalition pointed to a number of issues it sees contributing to creating the poor conditions that led to last week's standoff with prisoners. Among them, the inadequate education of children from impoverished backgrounds and unequal punishments for black and white students in some schools. The latter creates what's been called the school-to-prison pipeline, and it's an issue that recently caught the attention of a student in our Generation Voice project at Mount Pleasant High School's radio station WMPH. And we thought it might be interesting to hear what that student, sophomore Amaya Williams, learned when she took a closer look at the issue from the student's perspective.
The phrase school-to-prison pipeline is used to explain a growing phenomenon in schools across America. Studies have shown that the more times a student faces in-school and out-of-school suspensions, the more likely they are to drop out of school, become incarcerated, and get involved in violent crime, hence the name school-to-prison pipeline. Students of color who get in trouble during school for something as minor as being late for or unprepared to class or violating dress code rules are much more likely to be suspended than their white peers. In 2013, close to 14,000 out-of-school suspensions were given to students in Delaware schools, and while black students made up only 32% of the student body that year, they accounted for 67% of these suspensions. My name is Amaya Williams, and I'm a student at Mount Pleasant High School. As a student of color myself, I wanted to talk to some of my peers and some experts to figure out why this is happening and what's being done to address it. The school-to-prison pipeline has affected some of my classmates at Mount who've had unfortunate encounters with school authority. I spoke to one of my classmates, David, a sophomore at Mount Pleasant, about his experiences with school discipline. He shared with me what administration told him on his first day at Mount Pleasant.
When I first came to Mount, they reminded me that, like, you know, we're in high school now, so, and according to my previous record, if I get into another fight, I'm either going to go to juvie or jail.
In elementary school, David got into a fight with another student who happened to be white. The other student started the fight, but David was the one who was suspended.
I had to spend like 2 days at home while he was coming to school.
David missed out on valuable school time and had trouble catching up.
I think it damaged my reputation because, like, a lot of teachers tell me I'm a smart kid, and because I got suspended a lot in elementary school, I had to redo like a lot of classes. I never got held back, but I was always like behind in my work, so I think it kind of made me rush instead of like actually learning the material.
While David has been out of danger since then, other students haven't been so lucky. One former Delaware student is facing a lifetime jail sentence. He first got in trouble for carving his name in the back of a school bus seat.
It started when he was in the fifth grade. It was what they, you know, termed a dangerous weapon. He was expelled, and, you know, his life just kind of careened out of control after that.
That's Shannon Griffin, a community organizer with Delaware's ACLU chapter. Griffin is currently working with the mother of that student. A root cause of this problem is what's known as the zero tolerance policy, during which a student is severely penalized for juvenile disciplinary problems. Griffin says the zero tolerance policy isn't new.
Shooting in Columbine really kind of was the impetus for a lot of schools going to zero tolerance. And I think it's a huge negative impact. I mean, when we talk about, you know, the idea of students being involved in a criminal justice system, more often than not, they're first introduced to the system, not in their neighborhoods, regardless of how rough they may be perceived, it's in school.
This policy has been in play for about 15 years.
The zero tolerance policy has created a breeding ground for children to ultimately end up in the prison system.
That's former Wilmington City Councilwoman Sherry Dorsey Walker. She and Griffin agree that policy often translates to a school-wide mentality. Griffin says schools have a tendency to influence negative behavior instead of enforcing the positive.
You know, what I hear from parents is sometimes they don't even want to answer the phone because they only hear from the schools when it's a problem.
Griffin said the mother of the student mentioned earlier, who was in possession of the carving knife, pleaded for school officials to provide help for her son.
His mother, who I know really well, you know, was crying out for help. She's saying, listen, he needs some more resources. He needs some more services.
She added there is a serious problem with the lack of early interventions in schools. Many students only qualify to receive mental health counseling after multiple serious offenses. The incident with the carving knife also wasn't considered a serious offense.
You know, they're like, well, you know, what he did wasn't bad enough to kick in additional services that could possibly benefit it.
However, Dorsey Walker says there was no one method for discipline. Each child is different and requires a unique approach. David agreed with both Griffin and Walker that alternate methods would do the least amount of harm to a student. David shared an alternate form of discipline that his school put in place for students like him.
Due to my attitude, I was enrolled in a special group that would leave the class every once in a while, a few times a week. Basically, attitude adjustment.
Dorsey Walker added many school administrators and state officials don't understand the impact of district-level discipline policies.
You'll never understand the circumstances of some of our children until you've taken the time to just be in their shoes.
Still, David has significantly improved since that fight. He says that by middle school, things started getting slowly better. Although he wasn't perfect, his act started to straighten out. He even began to make peace with his former enemies by the time he reached middle school. Coming to Mount Pleasant High was a real eye-opener for him.
Well, yeah, as soon as I came to Mount, my act was kind of straightened up. I kind of took the high road. Instead of fighting with my fists, I kind of fight with my mouth now, so I'm more of a smart aleck, have a higher vocabulary, so that's even better.
He went from being a child threatened with being thrown into juvenile hall to a very accomplished student with a reputation for his intelligence and kind, loving nature.
The me right now, I don't like to have enemies or anything. I know a lot of kids right now that I used to fight a lot, and we're like the best of friends. I got one kid who I used to fight a lot. We're partners in cooking class, and it's just like the new David is more peaceful than the other David.
Shannon Griffin said it best.
First of all, you have to see each other as human beings. I mean, I really think it's just that basic.
For Generation Voice, this is Maya.
Our thanks to Mount Pleasant High School sophomore Maya Williams for this piece, and thanks to our Generation Voice youth media producer Megan Pauley for guiding its production. And The Green wraps up next with Enlighten Me and the story of a 52-year-old college student who went from being homeless to studying at Penn. You're listening to Delaware Public Media.